This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. Welcome back to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2, InsideSTL.com. My name is Jeff Jones, Matt Davis across the table, pushing on the buttons, doing the professional radio stuff. Brad is out this morning, and Carrie and Sarah on the road back to Indianapolis. We are extraordinarily grateful that they managed to stop in and have a little time for us this morning. And Matt, I got to tell you, it's probably a little embarrassing, but that song, for me, I will always hear Puff Daddy before I hear Led Zeppelin.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
I know. It's so crazy.
I don't even get the reference.
So that song was sampled by old P. Diddy on the Godzilla soundtrack in 98.
And it's
a pretty good sample, but yeah, because that was when I was coming of age as a person aware of the world, and P. Diddy stuck it in my brain. I don't know.
Might check that out later.
It's a pretty good cover. I would for sure suggest that was at the height of the bad boy powers.
I don't want to think of would you say P. Diddy?
Yeah.
I don't want to think of P. Diddy before I think of Led Zeppelin when I hear that song.
And I'm telling you,
seems blasphemous a little bit.
I'm not proud of it, believe me.
Okay.
I'm admitting things that I feel shame about. That's where I'm at right now, for sure.
Well, shame's a little too far, maybe.
Maybe that's fair. First hour Game Time AM is in the books. You'll be able to podcast shortly. You will hear lots of interesting talk. Actually, a lot of legitimately interesting stuff about the Indianapolis 500 coming up this weekend. A thing that I truly know very little about, but that Sarah, thankfully, is an expert on, was able to break down for us, along with some Bachelor breakdowns, some Indianapolis visitor stuff, lots of music, lots of movies. Got some Steve Martin going on in there. We sort of hit the hole, I think. In the 5 o'clock hour, so definitely recommend. I did too. I think a little fresh blood. What is it? It's Willy Wonka, right? A little nonsense now and then is cherished by the wisest men. I think.
I don't recognize that.
No, it's when he sings when they're on the boat. They're heading in the tunnel.
In the original one,
yeah, the original, the Gene Wilder version.
That's possible. I don't know that I can.
Are you more familiar with the Johnny Depp version than the Gene Wilder version?
I'm about equally familiar with both of them, which is I've seen them. But that's about it.
Have your kids seen either?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've seen the Johnny Depp one.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, you got to get them to the Wilder version because it's got more soul to it. It's more pure, and it will also scare the hell out of them.
Will it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The scene in the tunnel, the scene where they go down the tunnel and Willy Wonka.
Okay, the boat.
Is like one of, I think for children, one of the scariest scenes like in movies.
I can agree with that.
For
yeah,
sure.
It was creepy.
So, your St. Louis Cardinals. 6-1 win last night in Los Angeles. Mike Leake, 8 strong innings, 4 hits, 1 run, no walks, which is the primary concern here because Rich Hill walked 7 in 4 innings for the Dodgers. Pretty hard to win a ballgame when you're putting that many guys on base, and ironically, not the reason that the runs were given up. But, you know, with the Dodgers going down 6-1 last night, Cardinals now improved to 23-20. Jed Jerko, 3-for-4 last night with 2 runs scored in an RBI. Yadier Molina with a solo home run. You do flash a little bit of concern. Fowler, 0-for-4, 2 strikeouts last night. Piscotty, 0-for-4 with a strikeout combined, 7 left on base. Grichuk, 0-for-4, got the sombrero last night, 3 strikeouts, 5 left on base. At some point, somebody in the outfield needs to hit the ball, Matt, or we're going to have a little bit of a problem.
That would be ideal. Who's going to do it, though?
You know, at this point, it's going to be hard to keep a guy like Tommy Pham out of the lineup, right? Like
apparently not.
You know, I understand that you want Grichuk to be something, and I understand that you think Stephen Piscotty is something already, but if you got a guy like Pham on the bench who can't do anything besides hit, I don't know. It seems to me that at some point,
well, Pham has sat for 3 of the last 4 games, hasn't he?
He has,
that. And so apparently, it's not too difficult to keep him out of the lineup.
But the thing that we have to remember with Tommy Pham is that there's no way to know how healthy he is on a day to day basis. I don't know. Did you read the story about his eyesight that Derek Gould wrote over the weekend?
No, I didn't read it.
Derek Gould published a story over the weekend where the explanation was that Tommy Pham. So Tommy Pham has a degenerative condition, I believe, in his retinas that causes them to be football shaped, and so light basically deflects differently for him. I guess he's legally blind in his left eye, which, as a baseball player who bats right-handed, is amazing because that's your lead eye facing the pitcher, and Tommy Pham is legally blind in it. And so I guess on a day-to-day basis, he shuffles between multiple sets of contact lenses and has to find the right one that works on the right day. And so, you know, when you see things like Pham hitting 300 but not playing for 3 or 4 days, I think it's fair to speculate that maybe his contacts are out of shape, or, you know, he can't see at the moment, which is rough.
It doesn't seem like baseball would be a very, it doesn't seem like he'd have the longevity.
Pretty hard to play baseball if you can't. And in that article, Pham talks about how, as a developing player, you know, when you move from guys who can barely throw breaking balls to guys that are throwing big league curveballs, that he would never see the spin on the ball that, you know, that his teammates would describe, and he just thought that maybe I'm just not as talented as these guys. Maybe these guys, you know, are better at me. And it turns out that he literally could not see the spin on the ball. So I guess, you know, they've worked with him. He has an optometrist, I believe, maybe out in Colorado. I'd have to look and see exactly, but it's somewhere out of town where basically, like, on off days, Tommy Pham will fly to the eye doctor to get his adjustment and pick up new contacts, and that's his reality. That's what he has to do to stay in the big leagues. So I don't know. You hope he's healthy, and you hope he's in a spot where he can play. You know, a great way to mitigate the effect of having a player on your bench who maybe can't see the baseball is to have 13 players and 12 pitchers instead of the reverse.
Yeah.
You know, if you had an extra outfielder,
that's an option.
Who would you think, maybe, you know, if you could bring Sierra back, you could put Bader on the roster. There's got to be a way.
I think that they should have found a way to keep Sierra up there. I mean, really.
Well, and the thing is, when you, at the point where you are trading Matt Adams, there is a way to keep Sierra on the roster, and it's just getting rid of the extra pitcher, right? I mean, that's it. That's the bottom line. All you have to do is ship out, presumably, Sokolovich. You know, I understand that involves putting him on waivers, and I understand that risks losing him, but I got to think that a 30-year-old reliever who has spent most of his career in the minor leagues with an ERA approaching 7 this season probably gets through waivers, right? Like, I mean, he's had
not
some
hard
success.
To replace if that's what you're worried about
right,
either.
Exactly. If you need another 4A kind of pitcher, you have guys who can fill that role, right? Like, how much worse than Miguel Sokolovich is Deck McGuire? It can't be that much worse. I mean, there's no way that they're, you know, that it's worth hamstringing the team for sure. Yeah. So the hipster of Tower Grove South firing in some hot movie takes at the moment we're going to get to.
Oh, nice.
The first is that every time he hears Matthew Broderick, he thinks Godzilla and not Ferris Bueller.
What about the Lion King?
I actually
Simba.
Think the Cable Guy. The Cable Guy is where I go with Matthew Broderick first.
All right.
But I get
the
it.
Producers on Broadway.
Oh my God! I love The Producers.
I've never seen it.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I don't think so.
Well,
he was in the movie too.
He was in the movie version that came out in 2005. It was him and Nathan Lane who originated it on. Well, not I guess they originated in the revival because originally it was in the '70s. Zero Mostel was the lead in that show. But then when they did the revival in the '90s or maybe early 2000s, they were. They had the leads. The movie version, they have the leads. Will Ferrell plays the Nazi in that movie.
No kidding.
Yeah, very.
Didn't know that.
Very, very, very entertaining. I actually saw I say semi-professional. I mean, they were professional actors, and it was $40-$50 a seat to go see stuff. But there was a semi-professional theater in Chicago that I used to go see stuff at somewhat regularly, and they put on The Producers, I guess. Oh, about a year and a half ago, and that was a pretty good way to spend an afternoon. But he also, the hipster also texting in to say that Reese Witherspoon was legally blonde, and it didn't stop her from dominating in the courtroom. That's true. That, Matt Davis, is the only movie I've ever snuck into in my entire life.
Legally Blonde?
Legally Blonde.
Okay.
It came out on a Friday evening. I was in seventh grade. And my ride was late picking me up. So me and I think two or three of my friends were late getting there, and it was sold out when we arrived.
Oh, wow.
So we bought tickets to Final Fantasy and then walked across the hall to Legally Blonde.
Final Fantasy was a movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
There, yeah. And, well, That
I never geeked out on Final Fantasy like so many other people.
I did not either. That's not. I don't really have the patience to play those kinds of like in-depth video games.
Right.
And yeah, so I was never really into it, but I did buy a ticket to Final Fantasy and then use it to sneak into Legally. So I at least paid for a ticket. Like, yeah. I did buy a ticket to a show, but I ended up sitting on the floor of the theater, like on the steps.
Fun fact. Yes. I think it was her boyfriend in Legally Blonde.
Okay.
The actor's name is Matt Davis.
I believe that.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that guy had,
I think,
like,
it was her boyfriend.
Do you think he had like a great career after that? I don't know.
I don't believe he did.
No, that's a shame.
Not a lot of recognition.
That's, you know what? And again, another movie turned musical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Legally Blonde is a musical for sure.
Lord help us.
It was like a Tony Award winning musical too.
How?
They,
I how mean, is that a movie that gets singled out for a musical?
Well, I mean, there are musical numbers, I think.
Was there?
In that, yeah, I mean, you have the whole bend and snap thing. You have the stuff with the sorority. I mean,
bend and snap thing.
Yeah, the thing where she goes to the salon and she drops the package and she's teaching the nail tech. You bend and you snap to attract the attention of the UPS delivery man.
Okay.
Matthew W. Davis, by the way. Pretty long career. He apparently had a starring role in The Vampire Diaries.
Okay, I've never seen that.
I've never seen that either, but judging by the name of his character, he was a vampire in
a bad guy.
In 123 episodes of The Vampire Diaries. Oh,
that's pretty good. That's accomplished. Then,
that's,
I would
you
say.
Know what? That is. That, I mean, that's a regular role on a TV series, right?
Mm-hmm.
It appears that he did not have a lot of movie roles, but
right.
definitely crushed the TV circuit. He might have gotten blown up in Pearl Harbor. He's got a role in Pearl Harbor listed as Joe.
Yeah. Basically an extra that has to explode later.
Yeah, probably caught a little bomb to the chest there. But yes, Mike
Leake. Cool fun fact.
Mike Leake,
what about him?
It's good. 5-2. ERA is under 2 at this point. Rotations line up. You might see Leake against Kershaw coming up here on Monday when the Dodgers are back in St. Louis. So that could be a pretty interesting matchup for sure. I don't know, man. If they can hit the ball, this Cardinals team is apparently going to go places because the starting pitching has been fantastic so far. And
speaking of hitting the ball,
yes,
Matt Adams has been hitting the ball.
Matt Adams has been crushing the ball. I didn't see what he did last night, but I know that he had home runs in back-to-back games going into last night.
He was batting over 300 in his short time with Atlanta so far with a couple home runs. So.
Yeah, I heard Rick Hummel saying, and actually Matt Adams 1-for-5, 2 strikeouts last night.
Okay.
But the one was a triple. So he's
a triple.
Yeah, he did.
Cool.
He did indeed triple last night.
Yeah.
I was listening to TMA yesterday and heard Rick Hummel suggesting that probably Matt Adams ends up on another team even yet at the deadline this year, which I guess is reasonable. The Braves have Freddie Freeman. He's going to be coming back right around deadline time. And yeah, if you're Atlanta, you don't need to hang
on.
That's
fair. Unless if he keeps it up, then he'd be a valuable bench bat. Like,
maybe finally, you get into a spot in the AL where he's. It's where he needs to be, right? I mean, he's a fine.
So he can DH?
Yeah, he's a fine defensive first baseman. He probably was the best defensive first baseman the Cardinals had while he was here.
Yeah.
But his future is probably. Well, I don't know. You think his future is as a DH. You do wonder how much of that is just sort of stereotyping guys of his body type, right?
Yeah.
Like the big, burly slugger types. I mean, those are guys who you look at, and the easy thing to say is, that's a DH. But I don't know. I mean, maybe not. Like, he was a solid defensive player. There wasn't a liability out there. So I don't know.
I kind of wish we'd have held on to him and just DFA'd Johnny Peralta.
You know, it's really.
Because I read something or saw a headline talking about Johnny Peralta getting time at first base potentially. And it's like, why would you get rid of Adams in that situation then?
The thing, there are two things about keeping Peralta that I sort of understand. But they both go to redundancy. So, number one, Peralta has more positional flexibility than Adams, right? Obviously, you want him primarily at third. He can play short for a while without hurting you. He can play first. He can play left. So
when you say a while, you mean like half an inning?
I mean, you could get him through. You could get him through a game if you had to, right? Like, you could survive with Peralta at shortstop. So you can move him around a little bit.
Okay.
But you can also do that with Greg Garcia, who has been hitting pretty well, right? Like, and I don't know that you necessarily need two guys that you can move around like that. And again, to a lesser extent, because he's your everyday third baseman at this point, but Jerko can play second, Jerko can play first. I mean, you know, there are other ways to use Jerko as well. Mm-hmm. The other thing that that Peralta has going for him is that he's a right-handed bat. So I don't know. With Adams, the left-handed bat was sort of redundant with Garcia insofar as that either can be a left-handed pinch-hitting option off the bench. Obviously, Adams offers you a lot more pop and has had more success as a pinch hitter. But Greg Garcia has been an effective bench player
right.
since he's been here. I mean, that's a guy that you want to have on your team. It's just a matter of, you know, do you want to stack the left-handers or stack the right-handers? I was of the opinion throughout the offseason that the Cardinals needed a fifth outfielder who was left-handed. They needed a left-handed hitting outfielder because they don't have that guy in the system, right? Like, I mean, they needed a Brandon Moss, basically, is what they needed back. A guy who could maybe play first, who can play the corner outfield spots, and who has that left-handed bat. And so at the point where they tried to make Adams into a left fielder, like I understood the thought process. I get why you want to have that option. I don't get why you wait until the middle of March to teach right. Matt Adams to play left field. I don't know why you can't do that starting in December, right? You can't look at the roster.
Well, it makes
matrix.
Me think that they maybe had their eye on somebody and then missed out, and so they were like, okay, well, we'll go with this
option.
Yeah,
and that is an interesting point as well, because you heard all kind of throughout the winter the conversations with the Royals, for example. You heard Gerard Dyson's name a lot. So you do wonder if maybe that was a guy who they were trying to complete. Maybe they're right. looking at like a Matt Adams for Gerard Dyson kind of trade, something along those lines that they weren't able to get done.
Right.
So it leaves them kind of high.
That's
and
the only
dry.
Thing to me that really makes any sense, because otherwise you're kind of just being negligent.
Right. And you know, say what you want, but I really don't think it's probably not that responsible to hang your hat on having to try to get a trade done. I'm gonna do the full tuna here, by the way.
Okay.
Stand up.
There you go. Stretch it out.
Gotta get the stretching going on for sure. But yeah, so I don't know. That construction to me was really interesting, because you do need a left-handed outfield bat, and Magner Sierra at this point maybe is that guy. I don't know.
We need to get him back.
I haven't looked at his numbers since he went down to Double A. I'd have to do that to see how he's hitting since he went down. I know that they sent him back down to Double A. Originally there was some thought that maybe he would be going back to Single A, because I think Derek Gould said that there would be I think he called priority center fielders ahead of him at the other levels, right? So you have Bader at Triple A and you had Oscar Mercado at Double A. But I guess they decided that Sierra was at a high
higher
enough
priority.
Level that right yeah that it didn't make sense to send him all the way back down to Single A. So
I agree. How do you come up to the majors, perform like you did,
right,
all
right,
then, all
then,
the way
right,
back down to Single A?
Thanks, buddy. You're going back down to High A for sure. Yeah. So I don't know if the Cardinals can put the bat on the ball, it will be a good year. Which is, let me tell you, that is some expert level analysis. But yeah. Magner Sierra, since returning to Double A, 5-for-17 with a triple and 3 RBIs. So nothing, you know.
I think two of those hits came in his first game.
Okay,
going back down there too. So
yeah, fair enough. So yeah, I mean, look, he's maintaining. You know, but there are shockingly all of a sudden there are outfielders in the system between Bader and Mercado, and you have Adelis Garcia at Double A as well. I mean, yeah. The Cardinals do have options for the future, and so when it comes time to start looking at deadline deals, that's where you
I gotta
from.
Say I think the future is now. I think something is gonna have to get done this summer with the outfield. There's depth, there's guys not performing the way we want them to, and they've been in these positions for going on 3 seasons now. I think this summer's time to make a move,
you know. And it's interesting because when we're talking about outfield depth, a guy like Luis Robber obviously
would have been
plays
nice.
A huge role in something like that. And when that didn't happen, my reaction was not that strong.
Because you never really expected it to happen in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just bought hook, line, and sinker too much to the organization's position that we made a good offer and he just right. wanted to go to Chicago. I don't know. I honestly, and this will sound maybe a little ridiculous, a lot of the things that I feel about the Cardinals, I feel better when Derek Gould validates them.
Okay.
Right? Derek has been around the team long enough. I respect the hell out of Derek as a writer, and I respect his opinion so much that I feel better when I think things and I hear Derek also say or see him write those things.
Makes sense.
His reaction to me was pretty interesting because it was pretty strong in the context of fans should be upset, the organization is out of excuses. Which I thought was interesting. I mean, and you should read his stuff for himself just in case I'm not characterizing it fairly. But I think it's a fair characterization that Derek was pretty much along the lines of, you know, fans have a right to question whether or not the approach that this team is taking with free agents and with top level talent is getting the job done. Which made me sort of stop the question. Maybe I'm giving them too much leeway. I don't know.
Okay,
that's interesting.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. You are listening to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2, InsideSTL.com. I'm Jeff. Matt's over there. Brad's out this morning. If you want to get involved, it is still 855-282-8255. 855-282-TALK. 855-282-8255. So, your St. Louis Blues yesterday making a move to bolster the coaching staff. Daryl Sador promoted from the AHL Chicago Wolves to be an assistant coach with your St. Louis Blues. A number of interesting things about that. Number one, four players on the Blues that were teammates of Daryl Sador when he was last here in 2009-2010. Alexander Steen, Patrick Berglund, David Perron, Alex Petrangelo, all on that team when Daryl Sador was still playing here.
Wow, it seems so much longer ago.
It does seem that much longer ago, but and conversely, it's strange to think about Alex Petrangelo as a guy who's been in the league for 7 years,
yeah.
and yet here he is.
That was just something I was talking about the other day, talking about Petrangelo and his development. And I said,
yeah,
I got to imagine that he's pretty much quite near where he's going to be as far as development goes, because he's been in the league for six, seven years.
I believe he's 26. Yeah, I mean, this is the player he's going to be for sure.
Right, he was full-time NHL at, what, 21 years old?
Yeah. Which is you know, no small feat,
right?
To be sure. He did only play in 9 games the year that Daryl Sador was here, so that was the second year where he was
on that
9-game tryout. But I believe he actually played. He was Sador's partner for a large part of those 9 games, and so it's an interesting dynamic to see a guy, you know, as the assistant coach who was once the defensive partner of the team's number one defenseman and captain for sure. The common speculation yesterday was that Sador will likely take over for Rick Wilson in running the defense and being in charge of the penalty kill, which makes sense. Solid defenseman throughout his career, has a history of working with Mike Yeo, was an assistant with Mike Yeo the entire time that Yeo was in Minnesota. Pretty much a no-brainer.
In the AHL, weren't they together in the AHL?
Yes, they were
as well?
In the AHL for Houston as well. So a long relationship dating back for Daryl Sador and Mike Yeo. So makes a lot of sense that he would be a guy to join the staff.
Yeah. Daryl Sador was always one of my favorite defensemen too, actually, because of the late 90s with Dallas and going to the Stanley Cup and all that. I was a huge fan of Daryl Sador.
That's another tie there, because he has the ties to Armstrong from those late 90s Stars teams. So all sorts of reasons for Sador to be here. It does create a continuation of that, you know, now that even though Hitch is gone, the Hitch and Armstrong thing where we reach out to grab a whole bunch of old Stars players and thrust them into positions of prominence. But no, I mean, I think that there are reasons to be optimistic about Daryl Sador as an assistant coach for this team. A thing that I did find interesting yesterday was Rutherford said that there were no other hires imminent at the moment, which I think is interesting. Because if you can get the deal done with Sador, and if you're trying to get a deal done with Craig Berube,
it does give
pause to wonder why one of those things would be held up.
Well, I think with Craig Berube, he's probably waiting to see what kind of a head coaching job he can get, you know, whether with the NHL or even in the AHL. He was doing a fantastic job with Chicago.
He was.
So there's no reason for him to, you know, sign up for a long-term or even a 3-year contract or anything as an assistant coach if he has his sights set on something bigger.
And I do wonder if perhaps there is something in a negotiation where, you know, the development of an out clause or whatever, or negotiating that the Blues have to allow him to interview elsewhere, right? They can't turn down requests. So maybe that's the situation that he's trying to work out, basically, okay, how can I get out of here when the time comes for me to get out of here? And there are, you know, Buffalo has not filled their head coaching position. Florida has not filled their head coaching position. They both appear to be hot after Bob Bugner. So maybe the one, you know, the one who loses out on Bugner maybe turns to a guy like a Craig Berube to fill in behind the bench. Yeah.
So after all this plays out, he could still end up on the Blues bench. But
he certainly could, right? It's not that he's
gone. There's got to be some interest in the league.
Craig Berube. You for sure would think so. And I know that, you know, in the media call they had there after the assistant coaches were let go, the conversation was that, you know, Berube had offers last summer to be an NHL assistant, but took the job running the bench in Chicago because he wanted to get that head coaching work in, and he wanted to show what he could do as a head coach. And so, yeah, it's probably reasonable to question. Maybe he feels like now he's ready to get back behind the bench. And if that's the case, then I can't blame him for wanting to hold out for that opportunity.
Right. You have to. I think he's earned it. And if he can get it, then go ahead and lock it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, come on back.
Right.
We'd be happy to have him.
That's gonna be interesting because I know that the team said they wanted to have the coaching staff in place before the draft. Now that's basically a month out, so they do have some time. But we are for sure going to be getting into a busy period of roster movement coming up here.
I can't wait. I am so ready.
It is going to be a fascinating set of weeks because the Stanley Cup Finals will kick off, I believe, on Tuesday. Regardless, you know, so game seven this evening between Ottawa and Pittsburgh. I believe game one of the Cup Final will be in either Ottawa or Pittsburgh on Tuesday evening. So the Predators are sitting on a plane waiting for a destination at this point.
Nice.
So I believe the latest that game seven could conclude is, I think it's the 11th or 13th of June, something to that effect. So you're going to have basically 2 weeks of just absolutely hectic roster movement where teams are going to be scrambling to put together the right number of protection slots, make sure that the guys they want to be protected are protected, getting bad contracts shipped out, dealing with buyouts and the free agency window. It's going to be perhaps, I'm trying to think of a time when there has been more extreme roster movement in the NHL.
Last time there was an expansion draft, perhaps?
Yeah, that or when the cap actually decreased coming out of the lockout in 12-13 and then the cap went down for the next year. There was a lot of finagling that happened in that summer, and so I do wonder.
So when does the expansion draft take place?
I believe it is a period of days. So I believe the teams have to submit their list to Vegas of the players that they're protecting. I think it's like the 21st, and then Vegas has until the 23rd or 25th to make their selection. So basically Vegas has like 72 hours to take the lists that are submitted by the teams and pick their exact players. Of all of the nitty gritty, like nerdy hockey stuff that would interest me, one of the ones that I think would be most fascinating would be to be in the room when the Vegas folks have been doing those mock expansion drafts over the last couple of months. Like I know that they've been scheduling a bunch of those where they create mock protection lists and then they go in the room and then they say, okay, so who do we want if this is the set of guys that is protected and so on and so forth. So I don't know. That to me would be fairly fascinating. Hey, Matt Davis, do we have some spots we can run to go to a break real quick? Fantastic. We're going to take a quick break here on Game Time AM. You are listening on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 and InsideSTL.com. Come back here at the conclusion of this break, and we are going to be ready to go for the last half hour of the show.